take whatever treatments they give me. So we can maybe beat the supposed thunderstorms that are coming in again. Well, I'm gonna open with Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, actually, we'll start by opening up the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board Meeting, and we'll call the roll for HACA and for AHC.
That's what we'll do. I'm gonna call, then I'll go ahead and open the meetings for the Austin Affordable Housing Association and the Housing Authority, City of Austin.
Commissioner Bailey?
Here.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
And Commissioner Ritchie, who's not present, is on the way.
We have a quorum.
And the board meetings are opened at 12:05.
And we'll do the other one?
Oh, for that, so that, that opening applied to both.
Okay, good.
Three. But we can do the Pledge of Allegiance now, now that the quorum's been certified.
All right. Mary, you wanna lead us?
Yes. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chairman, a quorum has been certified for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. There's no public communication, but we'll go and ask one more time. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board from the public? Seeing that there's none, we'll ask Lupe Garcia from the Citywide Advisory Board to come forward and give a quick update on Citywide. Hey, Lupe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's everybody? Okay. Ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I, Lupe Garcia, Citywide Board President, call the meeting to order at 10:32 a.m. This is for a May 14th meeting. Mary Apostolo, resident commissioner, read the minutes from April 9th meeting. Ellis.
Talk more into the mic, please.
Okay, now. Alice Madrid, president of Gaston, motion to accept the April minutes. Ricardo Medrano, president of North Loop, second the motion. Thank you. Alice Madrid, citywide board treasurer, provided the treasurer's report with the citywide balance is $4,931. Presentation. Michael Gerber encouraged residents to attend the upcoming Mayfest and the Women's Conference. Thank Austin Community College interns and congratulations to the class of 2024. Chris Duran, City of Austin Housing Department presentation about a $13 million grant awarded from HUD to the city, and they're interested in receiving community feedback. Funds include rental assistance and homeless initiatives. Michael Roth, Vice President of PAMI, very high remarks in the upper 90s for inspections at North Loop and Manchaca Village, Georgia Manor, North Gate, Chattel Bend are upcoming. The Rent Cafe for online rental payments and work orders will be launching soon. Austin Pathways Updates, Lelina Villegas, Senior Director of Community Development, welcome Charles and Russell, the new family self-sufficient coach. HUD Resident Council training on June 13 and 14 in person at the HACA Central. Abby from Youth Education Success, we have 67 residents enrolled in the FSS program. 14 are earning an escrow. Murphy Rowland, Workforce Development IDAS graduation is tonight, and we have two teams that who recently joined. Brahma Lee with Bringing Home Health, CVS Mobile Health Clinics coming to Bolden, Coronado, and Georgia Manor. Catherine Grego received 60 new laptops donated by the Humane IT. Alice Madrid will be hosting a Mother's Day event with the bingo and prizes next week. This meeting was adjourned. Alice Madrid, President of Gaston, motion to adjourn the meeting. Ricardo Medrano, President of North Loop, second the motion. Meeting adjourned at 11:42. Any questions?
Mr. Duncan Hall?
Did you say that there were 67 or 69 residents who were part of the FSS program?
Yes, 67 residents.
67. Is that the highest number we've had? It sounds pretty high.
It's our first year, so we're pleased about that, but yes. So out of the 67, we're already calculating escrow, which is wonderful. And we have a second year, the first year has been renewed, mm-hmm. and then we have three more. We have Coronado now, Georgian, and Santa Rita. So we're expanding the family self-sufficiency program.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Lupe and Mary and others have been working really hard on Mayfest tomorrow, and then in 2 weeks we have the Women's Conference at the IMOMs, and under Lupe's leadership, has been helping to piece together. We hope all of you will come if you're available tomorrow at Parque Zaragoza. It's from 11 to 1. The theme is sneaker prom, which will be really exciting.
Yes.
And then next week, and then in 2 weeks, on the 31st, we have the Women's Conference. Mayor Watson will be coming, and there'll be other community leaders as well. We're really excited.
Where's that going to be?
That'll be at the Doris Miller Auditorium.
Oh, it's on May 31st. No, I did send her the flyer, so.
We'll make sure you all get a flyer before you leave today.
Yes. Okay.
But we'd love to have you come to one or both, whatever you're able to. Any other questions for Lupe?
No.
Thanks, Lupe.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, we'll go down to the consent agenda for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. And we're asking for board approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on April 18th, 2024.
Anybody have any objections or any problems with the minutes? Hearing none, consent, we don't need a vote, do we?
I think we do.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll entertain a motion to pass the minutes from the April 18th, 2024.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nays, the ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman, again, with your approval, we'll then go to the action items. The first is item two, which is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 02843 to approve the fiscal year 2023-2024 Section 8 Management Assessment Program Certification, or CMAP. Lisa Garcia is here to present.
Good afternoon. I'm Lisa Garcia. I'm the Vice President of Assisted Housing, and it's great to be here today. And I'm here to ask for approval of resolution number 2843 for the submission of the 2023-2024 CMAP certification. And I'm happy to report this year's score is 104%. So with that, just a few things. We do have the quality control department take a view of our files to make sure everything's in order. There was only one error identified with regards to that, and then we have to submit things to HUD for on-time completion, and everything looked good there. And then we did receive the deconcentration bonus points, which gives us that extra 4%, with 56% of families with children living in low poverty census tracts. Yes.
Is this the highest we've had? 56%?
I have to look back. I think it might be. I need to look back at the other. It seems like
it
is.
It's getting higher.
It is getting higher. Yeah. So I need to look back. But I think it definitely is higher than the previous year, which was at, well, actually it's not. So it isn't the highest, because last year it was, so there we go. Last year it was 58.4%.
I missed that.
Yeah, so it's 55.9 or 56% this year. But we're still in.
For the concentration, we got the extra points.
Yes, we did. We did.
Okay. Kind of tagging on to what Commissioner Duncan Hall has asked, I wondered when I was reading through this last night, if isn't part of our success in these deconcentration points the fact that we have the Austin Affordable Portfolio, which is outside of low-income areas?
Right.
I mean, is that some of
Yeah, I think that is definitely part of it, because we have, you know, a lot of you know, over 1,000 people in our programs living in the various Austin affordable housing properties, which are, we have a number of those in higher opportunity areas, so that definitely does contribute to that. Another contributing factor, I think some places maybe that traditionally were considered, you know, as they look at this every year, that maybe they, before they were considered high poverty areas, but in Austin now they're not high poverty areas. Uh-huh. They're lower poverty areas just because things have changed in terms of.
Now, back to Commissioner Carrington's comments. If, or do we have the number or percent increase of voucher holders who are taking advantage of these new, properties that we have done in the last 2 years? Because it seems that we're doing more marketing in that area. Do we have a sense in terms of either numbers of families or residents?
It's in the monthly report, Commissioner. Okay. And there's a column here that speaks uh-huh. to vouchers. So it has the number of voucher holders per property in the Austin Affordable Portfolio.
So we could look through that.
Correct.
And determine which ones are in low poverty
mm-hmm.
areas.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Good job.
Thank you.
If there's no other questions, Mr. Chairman, we would suggest a vote on the CMAP score.
All right, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Apostolo motions to approve. Commissioner Duncan Hall seconds. I would note that Chairman Ritchie has joined us. And is there any further discussion on this item?
If not, everyone in favor, vote aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The ayes have it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we'll go to item number 3, which is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 02847, approval of a contract for fire damage restoration of a unit at Pathways at Meadowbrook. I would also just quickly note, I've heard from several folks as Jimmy's taking his seat, that because of the thunderstorms and wanting to try to get out a little bit early, which is fine, so that's why some effort at moving quickly through some of this. So Jimmy's gonna give you the quick version of this.
I have a 37 slide deck to present.
Oh, good, Jimmy.
Good afternoon.
Not to disappoint.
It's good to see you all. Thanks for the tip, Mike. We'll move quickly. We did incur, unfortunately, a fire at our Meadowbrook apartments, and that occurred back in March 19th. Took about 30 days to clean the unit out and demolish it in order to have a bid walk to receive bidders to go through the property and look at some plans that we'd pulled for them to prepare bids. They were invited to the bid walk on April 18th, and we allowed to April 26th on the bids, received bids, and the best bidder out there for this particular job is J.G. Arco Iris Painting Contractors, determined to be responsive, of course, in his bid and all positive results with his references. Worked for us and done several fire jobs for us before. We're in good hands with this vendor. At this time, we do request a contract with J.G. Arco Iris Vendors for $114,500, the base bid. Please.
What was the cause of the fire?
A resident caused cooking fire, unfortunately.
And in reading, I mean, the unit was totally demolished.
Totally demolished.
Damaged.
And of course, in the fire address, the unit and the unit next to it gets soaked with water. So then we have a cleanup of two units with soaking wet materials. And that took about a month to move those folks out, demolish the area down to the studs, treat it for mold, which starts immediately after the fire water gets in there, and then be able to dry it out enough to produce plans and walk it and get a bid.
Are we charging the residents?
I can't answer that particular one.
I believe, Michael, we do charge up to the deductible.
Correct.
Which is $25,000.
Correct.
Thank you.
Great. If there's no further questions, Commissioners, we would ask for approval of Resolution 02847.
So moved.
Carrington moves, Apostolo seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you, Jimmy. Before
we'll
we move
right
on to the items under Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, two quick things I wanted to mention. One, if we put up the up on the screen. This is a wonderful mural that's been done of Lupe Garcia along, and there's other leaders in East Austin, but this one is on Cesar Chavez at Pernales. And Lupe was honored. And what's the name of the artist who did this?
It was from Creative Action.
It's super exciting. And it's a lovely, lovely picture. So if you're at that intersection, stop by and see, but an appropriate honor. Congratulations. Oh, we didn't. I don't think we have that one. We'll have to get that, which actually leads to the second thing I wanted to share. So thanks, Lupe. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So make sure to go see it. Telling those stories is something that all of you have been very, very interested in, and we're really delighted to welcome Gary Dingust. Gary, come on forward for just a second. Gary is our new director of communications. He'll be working with our specialist in communications, Damien Martinez. Gary has a strong background from the Austin American Statesman, and both in reporting and editing roles, and then working in private consulting, working with some public agencies, including Cap Metro. And Gary, you want to say a quick word?
I'm just really excited to be here. Everybody I have met so far is super nice. It's day four. I'm still learning stuff, but there's a lot of good things going on, and I'm excited to amplify that.
We're glad you're here. Welcome. Commissioners, we'll now turn to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and we'll turn it over to Chairman Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. I'd like to say first that it's nice to see Commissioner Bailey.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
You don't get a standing ovation, but we're glad to see you. For the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, we have established a quorum. Is there any public comment? I'm sorry. No public communication. So the next item is the consent agenda. One item, which is approving the minutes of the meeting on April 18th, 2024. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Then the action items are going to be Mr. Kowal. So this is the Ron Kowal show. The first one is approving resolution 00247, and this is actions related to the bridge at Avery Ranch. And since we're in a hurry, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you, Ron.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, guests. I'm happy to be back up in this hot seat again after a sabbatical from last month. I'm very excited to present these next few items to you, two of which are part of the five property portfolio that you've met Sam Kumar and the Journeyman Group. These will be the last two of his five that they've asked us to partner with them. I wanted to give you a little bit of a quick update on Avery Ranch. This is located just north of Lakeline Boulevard, east of 183A. You can see on the map behind you kind of a proximity of where that property sits. It's comprised of 288 units. It was finished, completed with its certificate of occupancies in September of 2023. We are currently, as of yesterday, 81% occupied. We are planning to move forward with stepping in as the managing member and general partner with Sam. This will be our, if we stay in order, our fourth of the five, but our sixth of together. We also did. Suzanne and I've done two tax credit deals with Sam, with the Journeyman Group before. So we've got a long-standing relationship with the Journeyman Group folks. It's got a great amenity package. Really don't want to bore you too much, but it's pretty much the same that you hear me say quite often, with a beautiful swimming pool, lounge, seating, cabanas, big clubhouse, very spacious conference areas, full kitchens, It's just a really dynamic, very well-built property in a great location where we don't have a lot of equities, and that was another good thing to see to why it was exciting to us. We'll be financing this through a Freddie Mac loan through Bellwether. I think you all are familiar with Bellwether Corporation and our lender, Kevin Bowen. Our loan will not to exceed $50 million. The entrance price for us will be $64,580,000. This property will serve residents. 10% of the units will be at 60, and 40% of the units will be at 80. But as Sam is always committed, we are very committed to getting deeper affordability as we continue to stabilize, with our goal to hit 20% of the units at 60% AMI. And I think we'll be able to achieve that.
How long do you think that would take?
I would say probably 6 months.
To get 20%?
I think so. 6 to 8 months. So I'm excited about that. We've got 20% of the units available right now. We've got about 233 leased out of the 288. Yes, sir.
Just to add something to Ron's comment. Right now, in the Austin market, it is cheaper to rent than it actually is to buy.
Yeah. I find that amazing, but
it really is, and the rents will allow us to hit that deeper affordability now, but where it's going to benefit us as an agency is when this market reverses. Those units will hold their affordability levels at that, so there'll be a bigger, deeper, more appreciated benefit, you know, in 24 months from now when we look back at this, because we're committed to keeping those affordability levels there and not raising the rent. So it'll be a really nice win for us. And again, Sam's very committed to the mission that we do, and we really appreciate his his service.
And this question will work for all three of these properties. Will there be any focus at all on 50% and below?
As of now, no. We have not committed to any 50% units here. When we discuss our new construction properties, those are more geared toward the 30 to 60 to 70% income averaged units, and you'll see more of those 50s in the new constructions. But in the in these at this point, it's just too difficult to finance by going that deep of affordability on these types of projects, especially when they were built and designed as market rent properties. So I think that's about as low as we can go for now. We will be taking housing choice vouchers, so hopefully that will help a little bit on that. Now, I will say, if things do well in the future, you know, that's the neat thing about the program we do, is being the managing member. We have these discussions ongoing, and if the property's doing well and we're hitting targets in terms of returns for our investors, we have that ability to maybe do some different things, and Sam's always going to be open to that. We also will have a very robust community engagement program through our CARES teams, which will be in providing a lot of cool support to the property during the operation of it. So,
is there a way that we can? Sorry, we can track our 50%ers. I know we have some.
Yes, absolutely. We have lots of 50s. That's at Turtle Creek. But on our portfolio alone, we track this on a regular basis. These we're still going under. We're still in due diligence, but we're still analyzing leases. We have to get more income certifications to give you exactly where we are. We feel we're at about 35%. Committed to affordability based on the units we have. I think it'll be a little higher than that once we do more income verifications on the affordable units. So, but yes, that's very trackable. I'm happy to share the whole portfolio demographic maybe next meeting or the meeting to come, you know, across the portfolio, show you.
I'd like to see that.
You bet.
Okay, thank you.
I think I shared with you, I haven't shared with you, this is 189 one-bedrooms, 87 two-bedrooms, and we have 12 three-bedroom units on the site right now. Great location, great property, you know, just getting fantastic reviews. The traffic is very robust out there. Lots of employment options and opportunities in the up and down 620, the Palmer area, the Lake Line area that this feeds into. So I'm very, very pleased with this asset, and I'm hoping you'll support it today. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Questions for Ron?
Ron, I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
I don't know who it is, Mike. There, somebody's building some apartments out close to where we live, and they've got a group of folks that are worrying about it. And I know every time they say something to either me or to Charmin, it's like, well, we don't want all these Section 8 houses out here. And we say that's not what's coming out there. What's coming out there is affordable, and if they're not all going to be affordable. And it's not one of, I don't think it's one of ours.
It is not. But we're familiar with it. We know the developer very well. They've had several, they presented a couple other options to us through them on other deals. They did not bring us this one. They wanted to do this one on their own, but you're right.
I don't know how they'll turn out. Of course, they've got Armbrust and Brown pushing for them, so I suspect I know how it'll turn out.
But, well, I think Councilmember Ellis really supports it as well, and I do think it's a, and I think the city is serving as the, because there's going to be a big gap there. The city, I think, is buying the land. It's some creative tool, but. I think it shows the importance of really the kind of community engagement that Ron, Suzanne, and our team do. That clearly didn't happen the way it should have there. By contrast, the two properties that are right along Vega and where we have the Markson and then this other project on Vega, you haven't heard it. I don't think we've heard a peep from the community about those two projects, and they're beautiful projects, and serve the exact same population that the one you're talking about there by Travis Country.
And I tried to explain that to them. They said, well, we don't, I said, well, you don't want firemen or teachers or policemen or civil servants. Well, no, that's not. Yeah, well, yes, it is. So I'm glad that we probably have a strike force that does all that kind of stuff.
We definitely work with the community, and frankly, we don't want problems that we don't want properties that are, radioactive at the get-go. We want, people are sophisticated in this town. They know the need that exists. Most neighborhood associations are reasonable, but nobody likes being talked down to or told what they have to do. Everybody wants to, we just try to be transparent and work with folks. And Ron and Suzanne are, about the best in the business on that stuff. So, you haven't seen rooms full of people coming screaming about any projects. Every once in a while you hear somebody come, but the thing that you'll hear them say is, well, I did talk to Ron and Suzanne, but I just wanted to make sure you all knew. That happens pretty rarely, and it's because of a lot of work that all developers and everyone in these types of properties should be doing before they get there. Luckily, this project is a different one. We've done that work, and so in the interest of moving things along just a little bit, we would ask, from the staff's perspective, an approval of resolution 00247.
247, which is actions related to the bridge at Avery Ranch. Mary Most, Carl second. Any more discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item, Mr. Kowal, is actions. It's resolution 00248, and it's actions related to the Windsor Park, the bridge at Windsor Park.
Correct,
right.
Windsor Park. And real, I know we're trying to get through this, but I think it's from to just add to your comment, Commissioner Bailey. Being that I'm in Lakeway, and there's Lakeway where there's no affordable housing there. There's Bee Caves where there's no affordable housing there. There's Southwest Parkway, which has no affordable housing there. Again, it's an education process. The Bee Caves City Council's approving their first affordable workforce housing deal. Lakeway is now taking it up at their city council to approve their first affordable housing to form a public facility corporation so they can start doing. And people are starting to educate themselves that the need for the workforce housing piece, the firemen, the policemen, the Walgreens clerk, the pizza maker, you know, everybody that works up and down can't live in these areas and can't serve the people that live there. So we're starting to see that momentum shift a little bit, which I think is great for the cities to start adopting that. Instead of us going into the cities telling them what to do, they're taking the initiative and forming their own corporations to do these types of things for their own benefit. So I think we're starting to see that happen across the spectrum, but there's a lot of learning curve on some of these areas that just aren't used to the affordable housing side. But with that being said, this will be the second of the five, and again, the seventh deal with Journeyman Corporation. This is a property called Windsor Park Towers. It sits right there on, if you can look on your map, it's just east of 35 and 290 in a pretty, pretty good area. There's a lot of stuff going up there. We have some assets in that location as well.
The original name for this is Windsor Park Towers.
Correct.
Is that to imply that they're all high rises?
No, this is not. It was just the name. In fact, they're getting rid of the towers, and we're going to be naming. It's going to be called the Bridge at Windsor Park.
Okay, but there are no towers.
There's no towers, no ma'am.
Okay,
We had that discussion because it was like this. No one likes that name, and it was it's just something that they picked, and so we are officially changing it to the Bridge at Windsor Park and removing the towers.
On the resolution. It's Windsor Park Tower LP that's the limited partnership.
The LP is staying the same because we're stepping into the partnership, so we're not changing any of the organizational docs to the corporation, but the name is going to change as officially be changed to Bridge at Windsor Park. They've already have a plan for the monuments, which is going to match our other insignia. They're very, very quick to make these changes. But this is so the LP and the partnership will stay the same because we're not buying anything here. We're stepping into a partnership, so that we're not changing any of the organizational docs as they sit right now.
But it'll be doing business as the Bridge at Windsor Park,
yes,
which
sir.
Is our brand. That's like Marriott's are owned by lots of different people, but they are. We want conformity with the brand as part of our partnership.
Right. So the twist on this one is this is similar to a property I brought to you a couple months ago with Sam, where it's brand new. It just got its certificates of occupancy in late February, actually February 10th. It's about 28% occupied. So we're not close to stabilization yet to get permanent financing. So what I'm presenting to you today is we're going to get a short-term bridge loan through Prime Group to carry us through to a perm. And when we get to that 90% stabilization rate, we will come back to you all to approve the official permanent financing. I'll be able to give you a better update as where we are on the affordability numbers. As I said, we're only 28% occupied, but it does give us that ability to start leasing more aggressively now to meet our affordable goal targets. It's a large project. It's 308 units. It's got 256 one bedrooms, which vary in very many different sizes from 500 square feet all the way up to almost 780 square feet. We have 47 two bedroom, two baths, and five three bedrooms. Again, this sits in a right there at that corner of 290 and 35. A beautiful property. Again, same kind of amenities, same kind of services that we'll be providing across the portfolio with Sam. Same target goals that will be 10% at 60, 40% at 80, with our goal to hit that 20% mark. Other than that, I don't know what more I can offer to you on this. This will be, like I said, a short-term bridge loan, and then we'll convert to a Fannie or Freddie loan down the road once we hit that stabilization, which is 90% occupied. I would think that's going to take us about 6 to 6 months or so before we get to that point. We are seeing an uptick in traffic across the portfolios anyway, and so we hope to get there faster, but you know, we're going to be very careful getting our affordable numbers back up, which Sam's put a priority on to get those leased first, which is great. We'll be taking about $36 million in debt on this one. The planned debt will not exceed $50 million. And the entry price for us will be about $65 million on this one. But again, I'll bring this back to you for further approval once we get to our permanent financing, whenever that may be.
Ron, I was pleased to see that there are a few three bedrooms.
There are a few.
Most of what we've looked at recently has been ones and twos.
I didn't understand.
Three bedrooms.
Yeah.
Five, but there are some three bedrooms. So.
Right. Yeah, we're really seeing as a portfolio overall, we're actually seeing a bigger high uptick in the two-bedroom unit rentals. One-bedrooms have always been strong because you've got a lot of single people or workforce people that are just you know, working in professional business, but whatever. But we're seeing a more demand on the two bedrooms across our portfolio than ever right now. I think you're seeing two roommates, you know, that sort of thing. And we're getting some families with maybe one child. The three bedrooms are there, and they're, you know, they have a purpose. I think we'll see more of that as these housing prices continue to start increasing. Maybe we'll get some of those, some more. But they're probably the least to rent right now in the market is three bedrooms.
Well,
hardest to rent.
I may be naive about all this, but $2,200 for two bedrooms seems to be, to me,
correct.
Expensive.
That's market price. Correct. So we adjust those to our affordable rates, which brings those down. So when we come in, those rents get adjusted to affordable, and I think a two-bedroom, the chart's in your book, I think, on the back. I think we still always attach the, not in the map, I think it's an attachment to the monthly report that I send.
Oh.
Maybe. I can't remember if we still put that in there.
I don't remember that.
And it gives you your 60, you can look at, there it is, your 60 and 80s. You can see what those two bedrooms will be renting for under the new rental. I like to show you what it's currently doing as a market rent deal. And so if you look at for a family of two at 60% AMI or 80% AMI, you can see those rents. I believe they're probably in the 16s, 1500s maybe, I'm guessing. But they're substantially discounted off the market rents. And so when you think about the benefit we're giving back to the community, that's one of the biggest things is that, you know, you have to go in and really discount your rents. And that's why we're working very hard up front on the bridge loan to get those documents in place now so we're allowed to do that. Because the underwriting changes when you start dropping rents drastically by, you know, $500 a month. So anyway, it's just a process, but those are the market rents as they were today. So those will adjust to affordability. And when we get to the permanent, I'll be able to give you a better picture of where we're at across the portfolio on that property as we start moving in the affordable components, which we already do have a few. So,
so move. Proceed, Mr. Gerber. My mouth was open. Any more questions for Ron? If not, do I hear a motion that we approve resolution 00248, which is take the actions necessary for Windsor Park?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Ron and Suzanne.
Yes.
Who's hiding out back there. Okay, and so the last one for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation under our agenda is resolution 00249, and this is the acquisition of Arella. Is that pronounced correctly?
Yes, correct.
Arella
Lakeline
Apartments. So, Ron?
Thank you. This will be the third of three. Little different partner here. This is a partnership that we're going to do with Belvoron Corporation again. This will be our 19th property that we've done together in the last 3 years. We're over 6,000 units together as a partnership. It's a 354-unit property located at 12700 Ridgeline Boulevard, very close to the Lakeline Rail Station. You'll see it's right there west of 183A and just north of 620. right in that real big heavy hub of the Lake Line area. So there's so much to do around there in terms of retail, and there's a lot of office, and again, there's, it's very close to the rail station. Very excited about the location. Once again, we really feel good about this area, especially the long-term need for affordable housing in that area. There's good grocery shopping. There's lots of amenities around there. This one is very, very interesting in that the units are extremely large. We have 132 one bedrooms that go from the minimum square footage is 726 square feet all the way to 861. 192 twos from 953 to 1176 square feet. And then we have 32 three bedrooms here, 1361 square feet. Very, very family oriented, which makes me excited. We see lots of kids running around. The buses stop and you see the kids run off the bus. Because of the size of the square footage, the families have taken advantage of it, and it feeds into the Round Rock schools, which are these three schools, and Westwood High School. It's very, very attractive in terms of the education side. So we're really excited to bring that one to you. This is built in 2017, so it's a little bit older. Sits on about 12 and a half acres there. Again, same amenities as we always talk about. The purchase price on this is $84,260,000, and we'll be financing this with a permanent Freddie Mac loan, not to exceed $64,200,000. Great rate, it's a little bit under 5.8, we got 35-year amortization. It's currently 96% occupied, so it's doing very, very well. I did want to share one more thing with you before, if you have any questions. We did do a lease audit. It's still pending on more income verifications, but we have, out of the 354 total units, we have 13 units at 30% AMI, 27 units at 40% AMI, 42 units at 50% AMI, 43 units at 60% AMI, and 81 units at 80 or below, between 80 and 60. So it's got a very, very strong affordable component already associated with it.
How did you manage that?
That's the way they leased it. And so we go in and we pull their tenant files and we do their income certifications to verify their incomes. Mm-hmm. And so those rents are set. What we're looking at now is that we're not putting anyone that, especially at the 30 and 40s and 50s, that they're paying 50% of their AMI, mm-hmm. 50% of their income, just, right. That they're being taken advantage of. So we're putting all that together, and once we, if we so approve this one, we'll go as a management team and make those adjustments to make sure that no one's being unfairly penalized. Belveron's great at doing that with us too. So,
Ron, could you make sure that information you just gave us appears in the minutes?
Oh yes, ma'am. Yeah. Yes, I will. Yeah, it's a total of 206 units of the 354 that are below 80% AMI. And again, we're serving. And when you ask about can we do 50% units in deals, this is an example of how a property matures. This is an older property, and we have nothing to do with this, but we find this that, and we will even create more naturally occurring affordability by managing how these rents are escalated. And Belveron's been great with us on doing that. And
19 deals with Belveron.
This is our 19th, yes. And I'm suspecting we'll have a few more.
Is that some
coming.
Kind of record?
That's our biggest partner, together with the 40. I think we're at 48 now assets. We were lucky on this one as well. This is a Canadian group called Starlight out of Toronto, and. We had a relationship with them, but I think there's some fear about legislation still in Canada about punitively investing outside of Canada and taxation on their assets. So they're trying to dump fire sale as much as they can now before they get completely destroyed when they have to sell down in the future. So there was 39 other offers on this deal when we went to buy it. We competed with all up and down the spectrum. Absolutely.
We invite Paul and some of his team to come in and visit with the board maybe at the next time we do the deal. I know different folks have met them, but they've been wonderful partners to work with, and they've had a lot of confidence in our ability to work with our management company, AMP, and others to really deliver a fine product.
And they've proven themselves is to their word. I mean, we've had no issues and no problems with them, you know, and how we manage. Of course, we have ongoing discussions and you know, things are a little tighter now, but they're still sticking to their agreements and you know, we're very fortunate. They're great partners. Good people.
I was pleased to see, I guess, the bridge at Windsor Park, that the Freddie loan is like at six something. So are interest rates coming down?
Yes, and this is a bridge. Actually, they've dropped 20 basis points in the last 2 weeks. We're kind of leveling off at about 4.35. Fannie and Freddie are looking at a spread. So how you figure your interest rate is you look at your 10-year treasury, which is about four. Let's just, for math purposes, it's at four. Say it's 4.3, and then Freddie and Fannie put their spreads, and Fannie has given us like a 1.12. So you add that to the 4.3, so you're at about 5.5, 5.5, 5.6. So you index lock the spread, and then you wait to rate lock based on where your 10-year is. You kind of gamble a little bit. You know, do you lock now or do you wait 2 weeks? And you know, it's kind of a gambling game, just how trends are going. But I think the 10-year's kind of leveled off right now. Seems to be stabilized after this last dip. In the last 3 days, so we feel we got a great rate, and we got some interest-only, time on this loan as well. I think it's 3 years interest-only, so it helps us stabilize the property. And the interest-only loans are very important to us because we're discounting rent so drastically that it affects cash flows and affects things. So by only doing interest-only, we're not paying principal down. It gives us the ability to get our rents in order and get the project stabilized to the affordable requirements before we start, you know, increasing those payments to start knocking down principal. And these are minimum 10-year holds with our partners, if not longer. They're very, very, very long. They're much more. This is not a quick flip and that's why we like Belveron, because they're in it for the long run with us.
Okay. Thank you. Any more questions for Ron?
Commissioner Carrington, if I could just ask Ron, with the rising interest rate, with the interest rate environment being what it is, I know board members are interested in serving folks at 30% lower, those lower levels. Would you agree that it's because of this interest rate environment that we struggle to do that? And certainly, we see it at Santa Rita as well. It's made our ability to serve those lowest income residents at Santa Rita as part of a redevelopment much more expensive and much more challenging.
100%. I mean, you know, as much as we try, and we all do, we try to do the right thing. I mean, it ultimately comes down to pencil and paper and what the numbers look like. And so, you know, we often look at this and say, where are we today? Where can we be in 24 months? But if we don't do this now, then the other 39 people that bid on this, you know, in 15 months are going to jack every one of these rents up by $400 a month when this market turns, and all these people are going to be displaced. Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers I read to you, those 30s and 40s, and those won't exist if we don't do this. So the good news is we're capturing some 30s and some 40s, but we're trying to do that, and we'll continue to keep beating down the affordability as we go. And that's why you don't see us doing a lot of stuff with different partners, because a lot of partners don't agree with us on that. They're not on the same page, and so picking those right people. But you're exactly right. The interest rates have caused that, and costs of everything have caused it, because we're not getting, you know, you're losing rental income because of the market's going down. But everything else is going up. So, again, it's just and you've got to meet certain loan requirements and lender requirements. And so it's a very difficult right now. But, you know, we're going to take advantage of the next few of these that are coming to us. I think we'll have a couple more that are fire sales that we're very excited about in the near future. More to come on that, but we'll see where we land.
Congratulations on beating out the other 39 bidders.
Yes.
Wasn't okay. Fun, but it was enjoyable when we found out we won, so we were very happy.
Any more questions, concerns for Ron? If not, then do I hear a motion to pass 00249 for the Arilla Lakeway Apartments?
I so move.
Mary second. Moves, Carl seconds. Any more discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
No, any opposed? Okay, thank you all.
Thank you, Commissioner.
That brings the meeting of the Austin Affordable.
I was going to make a motion to adjourn.
Oh, okay.
Meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
Okay. Thank you, Carl. Mary seconds. And what time is it? It is, what, 12:55? At 12:55. Now, I think I need a motion to close the meeting. Thank you. I always forget that. Okay. That ends the business for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
Well, I made a motion. She made a second. We need to vote.
Oh, we didn't vote.
Okay. All those in favor of closing the meeting?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The meeting is closed at still 12:55.
Commissioner.
They're doing very well.
Commissioners, returning to the HACA agenda, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we'll go to item number four, which is resolution 02844 with regard to the bridge at Avery Ranch, just approving again at the HACA level the action you just took at the AAHC level. Is there a motion to approve?
Move.
Carrington moves to approve. Apostola seconds. Any further discussion among commissioners? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Moving on to item number five, presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution 02845 to take actions regarding the bridge at Windsor Park. Same thing. You've already approved it at the AAHC level and asking for your ratification approval at the HACA level. Is there a motion to approve? Apostola moves to approve.
Second.
Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the resolution passes. The last is item number six, presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution 02846 to take action regarding Aroa Lake Line Apartments. Same situation. I haven't heard it at the AHC level. Carrington moves. Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Terrific. So now we've completed all the items that are on our action item list. We are going to go into executive session. That we need to just very briefly discuss a legal matter. I would just ask maybe my staff team, is there any outstanding issue that we were going to present to the board beyond the items we were going to talk about in executive session? All good. Barbara, from a finance perspective, anything you want the board to know? There's money in the bank.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Great. Okay. Then we'll go to the executive session. Mr. Chairman, again, using your authority, the board is going into executive session and closing its meeting pursuant to Section 551.071 of the Texas Government Code for consultations with attorneys regarding legal advice, pending or contemplated litigation or settlement offer. B, 551.072 of the Texas Government Code for discussion about the purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real property. C, 551.074 of the Texas Government Code to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a public officer or employee, or to hear a complaint or charge against an officer or employee, or D, 551.087 of the Texas Government Code to discuss certain economic development negotiations. And we are now in executive session. Is that it?
We should have what?
We should have a working microphone. So
yes, that would be nice.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, we're going to actually relocate the board meeting.
May 29th, yeah. Yeah, it's a stakeholder listening session. They got beat up on the Hill about not listening to stakeholders about the upcoming procurement, and they've just decided that, you know, they're kind of unrelenting on this cooperative agreement approach. So they've set up this meeting for the 29th. It's a little more inclusive than the one that they had back in April of last year. I think there's 75 attendees, and they're just giving us the opportunity to weigh in on this approach that, again, they you know, we were successful on the Hill in the last budget cycle of I guess defeating their efforts at a cooperative agreement. And I think shortly after, we were in a session a few months back, and shortly after, we reported that shortly after that budget cycle and the approval, they came out with the renewed effort to go forward again and do the cooperative agreement approach. So in a nutshell, again, the concerns there are, you know, it's not a contract. We give up a lot of our rights under our annual, what we have now under our annual contributions contract. The nature of cooperative agreements doesn't seem to sync with the nature of the work that we do, and in fact, references that government agencies use cooperative agreements when they intend to have, as it's put, substantial involvement. And you know, our position is a 25-year, approaching a 25-year-old, a quarter of a century program, highly successful program, and HUD's ill-equipped in either staffing or their knowledge to have substantial involvement, and there's not a need to significantly alter the program. So there's the larger issues related to cooperative agreements, and I think the concern is that it's kind of, as Mike puts it, the camel's nose under the tent in terms of HUD's ability to then look at other elements of public housing authority work, such as the Housing Choice Voucher Program, and say, no, we don't want to do a contract in that program either. We want to go in the direction of cooperative agreements. So it has some of the concerns related to that, and I think part of it would be the ability that that work might get procured, and it might be the procurement could be an open competition, so that would it mean it wouldn't preserve the 1937 Housing Act, you know, which affords us the ability to be exclusive to the work, or other housing authorities like us to be exclusive of the work. So we've been working with the LHAC group to prepare for that. That's in 2 weeks, and then subsequently, the following week, they're having two more stakeholder sessions that are virtual, so a total of three. So we're working hard to, you know, weigh in on that and then see where that goes.
And Michael's done a great job working with our Orlando Cabrera, our council up in D.C., to come up with a third way, seeing if there's some middle ground that would bridge where the state housing finance agencies are and where we are. And we hadn't been ready to do that, but NCSHA reached out, Garth Riemann reached out, had a conversation with Orlando, and there's been a number of conversations, which are, there's a lot of distrust. There's just a lot of not feeling very good about the relationship, and Orlando was very upfront about it. I think we've all been very upfront about that fact. We did put out the proposal to see if there's some way to bridge it. So it's getting a lot of attention, whether or not it'll be acceptable to the state HFAs or not. But it basically requires HUD and requires the state HFAs to still comply with the 37 Housing Act and with the federal
FAR and SICA.
So we'll see where that goes. But Michael's going to be the man on the ground in D.C. next week or in 2 weeks, and we'll keep you posted on how that goes, and really appreciate all he's doing. Yes, ma'am.
When you say a lot of distrust, is that between the housing authorities and NCSHA?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we had a conversation where we included NCSHA in the discussion. Sonia Zaderman from CLAFA point blank said, we view this issue going to cooperative agreements and getting rid of the ACCs for this work as an existential issue. And the response was, you know, okay. And they didn't join in any future conversations and worked continuously to pursue those cooperative agreements, because the belief is, what's not being said is, HUD would rather do cooperative agreements with 50 agencies, 50 state HFAs, rather than do many more contracts with local public housing authorities. Mm-hmm. There's just so many more of us, and having a competition among all the PHAs potentially for these contracts. I mean, we'll be in a competition with other PHAs. What we've said is we don't worry about that. We're not worried about that competition. We think our experience and price point and all that thing will win. There is some argument to, it's easier for HUD to administer it. But the other side of that, the flip side is that HUD administers hundreds of thousands of contracts. So, you know, 50 more or 500 more, you know, isn't going to throw HUD, you know, for now. It's just, we think it's a false argument. But we think it's a winning argument for NCSHA, and I think the other part of the distrust is that Stockton Williams, who's the relatively newish executive director of NCSHA, came to Austin and spoke at an event that I spoke at as well for Yardi. And Orlando actually flew down, and we met him. We sat in the Hyatt Regency, and he said, yeah, I understand where you all are. I totally get it, and we agree. If we can work together, many of our state housing finance agencies are also public housing authorities, and I agree with you in principle. Let me go back to Washington and see what my people think. And Garth Riemann, who's been there for 30 years, I worked with Garth on the Hill 30 years ago, you know, told him, no, we're going to do it this way, and because this is what our membership wants. And, you know, NCSHA totally did a 180, believing that we could work with them before, then found we couldn't. And they went radio silent, and we know that NCSHA had made big inroads on the Senate side of the House, on the Senate side of Capitol Hill. You know, the Senate was not in agreement with us, and we think it's because of deep relationships with some very senior members. Patty Murray is the head of the Senate Appropriations Committee, the Washington State HFA, dug in deep, and actually the PBCA up there, the Southwest Housing for Washington State and several other states up there, is based in Bremerton, and that lady has a direct relationship with Patty Murray, and she got told,
yeah,
you know, this ain't our issue, we're with the state HFA. New York, Rhode Island,
Massachusetts, New York, Rhode Island are the big
three. Are all seem to have this just stranglehold on that this policy position.
Yeah.
So it's been tense, and we've been letting Orlando do the fighting. I mean, it's he's very good at that, and we've got him leading the charge. But it seems like there's some softening with this third way. Maybe we'll get to another resolution, because now they've lost 2-3 times in a row, and so maybe there's I think they can see that maybe they don't want to lose a fourth time, and if administrations change or if there's something else that happens, it could be a whole new world. So I think they're trying to get what they can get now, and maybe compromising is the way to do it. Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to make what's probably a heretical comment. We are spending millions with Orlando and others to preserve this, these contracts. And I hear what you say about if this allows HUD to get their nose under the tent, then are they going to go after the housing choice voucher? So I understand that. But I kind of think about what we're spending in legal fees to try to preserve this, and what we've created through Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, which the idea was, I guess, about 10 years ago, we need to really create an income stream in case we lose the SHCC contract. So the truth is, if we lost SHCC, we would notice that money is gone. But we would still have a substantial amount of resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
That we can use for our various activities, the way we want to spend the money, Boys and Girls Clubs, communities and schools, et cetera, et cetera. And we're not having to be out there continually going to Washington and fighting for something. That's my two cents.
Yes, ma'am, I agree, and I think a lot of people are tired of sort of, you know, so the fight starts again. However, let me just say also, just we're bigger. We've grown along with our budgets as well. Austin Affordable is a huge source of revenue for us, and thank goodness we've built them up. I would just say, though, just by way of, you know, contribution, it still is, Southwest Housing is a humongous contributor in terms of revenue and the work we do, just the expertise that exists there. Just to give you a sense of revenue, just what we make that goes just to the, just all profit, is how much per?
Net a year for the two contracts is approximately $10
million. How much?
$10 million a year, annually. Yeah.
And I don't want to diminish that.
No, and we have done the math on what we pay in fees, yeah, versus that.
Less than $3 million, and that include over the entire course of the litigation included, and including not just Orlando, but also the government affairs.
Yeah, the procurement attorneys.
And that's all of us. That's been the whole LHAC coalition of what we've spent. We ourselves have spent less than $1 million.
Right. And yes, so it does go back to when we started in 2012. So we're talking about 12 years at roughly $9-10 million a year, less the fees. But, and it was a lot of Mike's efforts in helping create the LHAC group. That affords us the opportunity to basically pay 1/8 of the freight on the fees. So that's been a huge advantage to us as well. But in that equation, it's still a very lucrative return. But it is part of, like, when we pencil it out, is it going to all be worth it when they procure this? That, you know, we will do that math.
Let me put a finer point on it. Over the last 10 years, your contracts have generated $100 million in revenue for the place that we've been able to have access to.
Yes.
It covers costs and things. We've spent $1 million in that same time to cover Orlando,
right,
and others. That's a pretty darn good rate of return.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that story is even better to tell over the course of when you talk about what LHAC has done, because you're right, we still show, you know, a lot of leadership in that, but for some agencies that don't have an AAHC, that haven't done the affordable housing work that Ron and Suzanne Chop have done, you know, those agencies will be in a world of hurt. That's the best part of that, being partnered with them, because, you know, we do have some alternatives, but those other guys are really, you talk about existential, that really is so for them. I would also just note that the expertise that Michael and his team have, that we've done so many other outside contracts and have been able to tap into, you know, that resource, and we're actually talking to the city and others about maybe using some of those skills. You know, compliance is such a pressing, timely issue, I don't want to take anything away it's not just a money making thing. It's some really special people who have some really special real estate gifts that are well respected. I mean, you got people at HUD at some of the highest levels now who are like Danielle and Christy Newhouse,
mm-hmm,
and others who are, you know, really ascended, who got their start at SHCC, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just going back to your point, Edwina, I'm just thinking through, let's say, you know, it worked out where this went to the State Housing Association now. Then I guess you said something about Section 8. How did you decide to take that?
Well, our housing choice voucher, I think, was what you all seem to think might be vulnerable.
That seems to be the sense that.
Yeah.
individuals.
Well, I think it might create an opportunity for us to say, here we are. We've been running this program for 25 years. Because I agree with you, Carl. I mean, years ago in 90 or 91, the state had an opportunity to take on this program.
Yeah.
And for a variety of reasons, some aging opinion or something, said we can't commit future funds when we don't know we're going to have them. And so the state passed on it. So I would see that this might create an opportunity for us if it goes to the states or the state HFA.
And that's a fair thing. I declined it as well. I know Michael and Ben Carter.
Competition and Contracting Act is CECA is the acronym.
Good work in Texas and Arkansas. People in the state are better off in Arkansas. Better residents are better off because Michael and his team, who have been there for a long time, are protecting their interests and those in call centers and managing properties and know the properties. I mean, we have a deep bench of knowledge of skilled people, but also knowledge in there. I mean, people will look at low income people will lose if these contracts are moved. I really believe. I think we just want to give you the heads up today that there's, we'll come back to you with that third way. It is more for the ring around and free goals. I think we understand it's good.
Thank you. I'm good to go.
All right. Good to go.